listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by ProntPops.wordpress.com and KDUXWebRadio.wordpress.com.
You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. My name is Raymond Thomas Pronk, the presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. Welcome to the Pronk Pop Show. This is the Friday edition. And this is we had some outstanding news stories. I think the biggest is the fact that the stock market, if you have money invested in the stock market, reached new record highs. That's both for the Standard & Poor's 500 and the NASDAQ. So that's good news, especially if you're invested, and it looks like this rally might continue for a while. And that's all good news. But we also had a jobs report that was out. Now, some said, well, maybe the jobs report had an impact. Well, I think had some, but it's not the whole story by far. So what was the jobs report? Now, on its face, it didn't look that good. The unemployment rate went up a tenth of a point to 3.6%, but that's near a 50-year record low unemployment rate. But more importantly, the labor participation rate, which you really need to look at both numbers, went up, back up. Ideally, what you want is the unemployment rate, whether you measure it by U3, which is the headline number, which I just gave you, or U6, which is a much broader indication. It went up to 7%. Usually the U6 rate, which I tend to favor, but it's still misleading because it doesn't get the fact that you have millions of people that would come back to work. The unemployment statistics, in my mind, are public relations for the government to make it look better than it really is. Now, when Donald Trump was running for president, he was very critical of it. Now that he's president, presidents, when you get a good report like this, obviously hype it up, and that's what was going on. Keep in mind, for those that do not know much about how the Department of Labor puts out these statistics, the Bureau of Labor Statistics does, they do surveys, two important surveys, household surveys and establishment surveys, and they do this every month. And from those statistics comes, first of all, from the establishment survey, you get the number of jobs that were created, which was better than expectations. It was 128,000 new jobs. Now, that's, in my mind, if you just heard that number without some qualifications, that's sort of the low range, because every month the U.S. economy needs to create somewhere between 130,000 to 160,000 just to keep up with what? The fact that you have people entering the labor market for the first time, so-called new entrants. Those are typically people either graduating from high school or maybe dropping out of high school, and the same for college. So they go into the labor market and they're looking for jobs. And to keep the unemployment rate more or less constant, you need to produce at least that many jobs. It's very, very close to that minimum number. But the big adjustment you have to make here is the fact that General Motors was on strike. Their union was on strike. Now they've gone back to work, so those jobs will come back, so the numbers would be much higher, which is good. And that's an important point. But the second important point was that these numbers for jobs created in October, September and August numbers were also revised upwards significantly. So that's why I would say this is a good jobs report. Now, if you want to reduce the unemployment rate by just a tenth of a percent, though, every month, you need to produce, a good rule of thumb is approximately 300,000 jobs, of which approximately half to take care of the new entrants and the other half to reduce the unemployment rate down. Point one. Point two is, yes, you want the unemployment rate to go lower, and I think it can go lower, but you also want to get more people participating in the labor market. In other words, actually going out and look for a job. Because we have over 95 million people that are not currently in the labor force. Many of those people are retired and they're never going to come back. Many of them are in college, for example. Or you have one of the parents, whether it's the mother or father, staying home to raise the children. Traditionally, it's been the mother staying home. So people, there are valid reasons why people decide not to be part of the labor market. And some of those are permanent. There are people that are permanently retired. They're not looking for a job. So you got to consider the fact that you have over 95 million fall in that category, but maybe 20% to as high as 30%. So 20% of 95 million is around 19 million. And in my mind, that is the more realistic number that people can come back into the labor force. And that's much higher than just slightly below 6%, which is the government figure saying what the unemployment rate is. What I'm trying to say is we have millions, tens of millions of Americans that would come back to work if they could find a permanent, good-paying job with benefits. So we don't have a labor shortage. What drives me crazy, you hear, oh, we can't find people. You can find people if you want to pay them more money. There are people out there that have the experience, the knowledge. The question is, are businesses, employers willing to pay them? If you're really desperate for a worker, you're going to pay them more. And guess what? If you pay more, you're going to attract more candidates for the position. And the reason I mention that, because at one time, the Bureau of Labor Statistics published 7 unemployment rates. Now, they're unemployment, I'm not talking about unemployment rates for male, whites, minorities at all. This was a separate rate that they discontinued because it included people that were no longer looking for a job or had not looked for a job for over a year. They're excluded. If you have not looked for a job for a year, you're not counted as part of the labor force, though you might very well want a job, and if one presented itself, would be employed. So you have the bottom line. What I'm trying to say is this is a good report, but keep in mind there are tens of millions of American citizens that would come back to the labor force if the right opportunity presented itself. And because of that, and if that happened, what would you see? The labor participation rate would go back, and it should be going back to somewhere in the range of between 66 and 67%. And that's where it was in the Clinton years, as well as the early George W. Bush years. We had rates actually higher than 67%. And I've noticed, and I'm not going to embarrass the person, but I listen to some talk radio, and it's become very, very frustrating. There are people that are cheerleaders for Donald Trump. I'm not a cheerleader for Donald Trump. I'm not a Democrat or a Republican. Both of these parties have spending is out of control. As a result, the debt is ballooning, getting worse, and the unfunded liabilities and obligations of the federal government are 10 times the national debt. The national debt will very soon be over $23 trillion. That's $23,000 billion. That's a lot of money in and of itself. But the total picture would be you need to multiply that by 10. In other words, if you look at truly what the financial situation of the United States is in terms of unfunded obligations, also, and they're mainly for Medicare, Social Security, Medicaid, and government pensions. That's a lot of money, folks. The total gross national product of the United States will be, it's roughly around 21, so that's more than 10 times. So keep in mind that we have some problems, and the big problem is debt. And I just gave you the federal government's problem with debt. You have states that have problems. You have people that have problems. So even though we've had a terrific stock market, it's reached highs, and we've had, in context, a fairly good report, we're not out of the woods. And the reason why I bring that up, and I don't know the answer to this, although I suspect it. Remember, I did a show, I think, in the latter part of September, and it was on the fact that the Federal Reserve, the central bank of the United States, through its open market operations, intervene in the repo market. That has nothing to do with cars. This is the repurchase. Well, let me back up just a minute. Commercial banks have to keep a certain minimum amount of bank reserves. Now, sometimes they're short. Sometimes they have excess reserves. If they have excess reserves, they will loan to what they consider solvent other commercial banks overnight. What we're talking about is overnight 24-hour money that banks lend to each another. And it happens all the time. But when you get into a recession or in a situation where the banks are not sure how other financial institutions, how sound they are, how solvent they are, they become reluctant to lend. And that's what happened in the 2008 financial crisis that led into the recession. The recession started in December of 2007, and it really hit the fan in the fall of 2008. And that's when you had massive layoffs, and the unemployment rate was going up, and it continued to go up until 2010. Now, the actual recession was over by July of 2009. So it was over 18-19 month recession, and that's to be expected because over time you'll get different estimates. But we are in the longest economic expansionary period in U.S. history. But the question is, how long can it run? And what's getting some people nervous and thinks that I think we need a better explanation. I don't pretend to know what's really going on here, because we don't have visibility. The institution that has visibility is the Federal Reserve Board, and they apparently are not being totally forthcoming. Something is happening because what? That temporary need to inject financial resources into the repo market, where people will lend you money on your securities for a period of time. It could be a day, it could be a week, it could be several weeks. It's negotiable. How to inject money, cash, if you will, into that market, because some people were not able to, they needed cash, banks needed cash, and couldn't find it in the repo market. What you don't want is a loss of confidence due to a temporary liquidity problem. Now, the way they would describe this is the Federal Reserve is providing more liquidity, more reserves for the economy. And there's been a dramatic increase of that, over $200 billion. Remember, the total deficit of the United States for the last fiscal year was $984 billion. That's the big number. And that just adds to the national debt. Well, it looks like the Fed is back in, and this is what some people totally suspect, they're bailing out some financial institutions, but we don't know which ones, because financial institutions don't want to go to the Fed to borrow, because that's it. When you're really desperate, that's what you do. The first place you borrow money is where? From other banks. But if you get in a situation where other banks don't want to lend you the money and you don't want to go to the Fed, you can go to the repo market, and what they will do, you provide them collateral, in other words, securities such as government bonds, and they will make a loan to you, and then you agree, and it's the reason why it's called repurchase, you pay the money back, whatever the term of the loan is, you pay the money back, and what do you get back? You get back the collateral that you put up. Now, what's getting some people nervous is, why is this continuing? What's going on here? I don't really know, or I certainly don't know the name of the financial institution or the banks, and there could be more than one, and some people are guessing as to what it is, but could this lead to, for example, another recession, or even possibly a deflationary period, where prices, not only do we have much higher unemployment rates, but we also have falling prices. In other words, a repeat of what was happening in the 1930s. Now, I throw that out not to put a wet blanket on the fact that we've had record highs in the stock market and record lows in terms of unemployment, even unemployment rates, even though they went up slightly. You know, the good news I took out, although it's not the key, is trends here. What you want to see is the trend in the labor participation rate going up, up, and up. That means more people are returning to the labor market looking for jobs. And that enables employers to find people to fill those jobs. And we have a long way to go to get back to 66 to 67%. It's, in my estimation, it's going to take several years. But to do that, you need at least a constant, if not a falling, unemployment rate, no matter how you measure it, whether you measure it by the so-called, the U3 rate is what I'm talking about. The headline rate is what it's commonly referred to, because that's what you hear in the news stories on television, on the radio. And the news reports is they definitely give you the U3 rate. Occasionally, they'll give you the labor participation rate, and some will give you the U6 rate. There's a lot of information in those reports. That's why I include, and let me say this, for every story I do, for every show I have, I have a blog post that gives you some of my show prep, not all of it. Now, some of these stories are easy to do. What was puzzling and difficult to sort out, I don't think anyone has truly sorted it out, other than some people think they know what's going on, that we're the Federal Reserve, although they're not broadcasting this, is bailing out one or more financial institutions. And keep in mind, there's a strong interconnection between the financial institutions, because literally every day, one bank is going to have excess reserves, another's going to have, and we're talking many, many banks here, excess reserves that they can loan overnight, and others need it temporarily. That's fine and good as long as the banks are willing to make that overnight loan, because there's no collateral. And the concern is, what happens if in that 24 hours the financial institution crashes? Now, I wouldn't panic yet, but it's clear to me that the Federal Reserve has to communicate much better as to what is really going on here. And we'll see if they're going to make a statement. Now, remember, the Federal Reserve did cut interest rates, and I think they're going to cut them again. Although this was a, some are saying, strong report, I think it's above average report, because it was definitely above expectations. And the with the revisions, at least for the last 3 months, the pace of new jobs has increased. But you're always going to have people predicting. I make no projections, no predictions. I try to see what other people are saying, though. Now, you have some people think the economy could go into recession. Remember, we've had stories like that at the beginning of the year, mainly from Democrats, talking the economy down, which is not useful, especially when it's not happening. Now, I think the economy is still growing. There are weaknesses. The biggest weakness is in manufacturing and in capital investment. And why? Because other economies, especially in Europe and China, their growth rates are either dramatically declining or they are already in recession. So there's a big concern, is given the fact that this is the longest expansionary period in U.S. economic history, it's a record, folks, because it started in July of 2009. It's over 10 years and counting. That's a long time for any economy to be growing, growing, growing. And Donald Trump has been very critical of Jerome Powell, the chair of the Federal Reserve, because prior to they had a number of increases in the federal funds rate. Too many, according to Trump. And I would tend to agree, other than we need to get back to where it's the so-called normal, or a better way to describe it is a market-driven federal funds rate, not one that is continually manipulated, and that's exactly what's going on here by the Federal Reserve Open Market Committee. That is a target rate, and they intervene in the market by either buying or selling to keep the federal funds rate within a narrow range. And I think there probably at least one more rate cut in that, probably in December. And that's is referred to by economists as an expansionary monetary policy. So it's clear what the Fed is doing. It is definitely expanding the money supply, and that enables people to spend. And they are. Consumer spending is still solid. The softness has been mainly in manufacturing. So how long can this expansion run? Well, obviously, if you're a politician like Donald Trump, you would like it to go through the next election. And I'm of the opinion that that most likely will happen. But if the economy starts to slow down, what does that do to market confidence of both businesses and consumers? Everything is about confidence. You know, if you have a job, money's coming in, you spend your money. You should save your money as well. And the reason's simple. If you had saved your money and invested money in the stock market, you would have made a very nice return, thank you very much, given what the stock market could do. Now, what is the two areas of uncertainty? Now, last show I touched on one, and this is the one that's constantly mentioned, is will the United States and Communist China reach an agreement on something? I think they're going to agree on something and sign something, but that's not a long-term deal because a lot of the issues simply have not been resolved. We get brief glimpses into this, but it's clear to me that the problem is going to be forcing, as I said in the last show, enforcing any trade agreement with the Communist Chinese because they tend to cheat. That's the same thing with North Korea and its agreements on nuclear weapons. Bottom line, you can't trust communists, whether they're Chinese or Korean, North Korean in this case. So I'm not optimistic, and I think that the Communist Chinese are waiting to see, well, maybe Trump will lose next November, and if that's the case, the Democrats are easy compared to Trump. I think there's some of that going on. I wouldn't overplay it, though, because I actually think Donald Trump is going to win, and I'll get into that in a minute. So we've had a lot of economic news, much of it good, but a red flag, if you will, as to what the Federal Reserve is doing, interjecting money into the repo market. Someone needs reserves. Someone has a liquidity problem, and who is it? Financial institutions can be totally solvent. In other words, they're sound. They have capital, more than enough capital. But what happens occasionally, more often than you like to think, they can have liquidity problems. And that's when they need to borrow money. And like anybody, they want the lowest rate possible. That's why, initially, they go into the federal funds rate to borrow. But what happens if they continually have to do that, and eventually other banks suspect that maybe there's a problem with this bank? Then one possible way to get that liquidity is the repo market, and that's what's been going on. So stay tuned. I'll have more on this. I did post some videos, but I haven't come to any conclusions other than you need to watch this. The problem is, and it's a big problem, very few people, you can forget about big lie media covering this. Although, who knows, maybe they'll jump in. Yes, your financial news organizations will have a story or two on it, but they have the same problem I have. The Fed's not going to tell you what financial institutions, what banks, and it's not just in the United States, because financial institutions, there's a lot of interdependence, whether it's in the United States or abroad. So you can have a failure abroad that would impact the United States, or you can have a failure in the United States that impacts the world. What we don't want is a repeat of the 1930s, where we had deflation and a depression. And that's the one thing that the Fed is and should be obsessive about. We don't want a repeat of that. So that's why they are intervening in the repo money market by providing money. Now, let's turn to politics, or more particularly the Ukraine situation and Donald Trump's telephone conversation. Right now, I discovered this today, and I'll try to play it. I think I can play it. It's not too long. President Trump had a telephone conversation with the recently elected, this was back in July, end of July, Zelensky of the Ukraine. And that has been used by the Democratic Party, and I think misused. They thought they could, and they're still trying, to impeach Donald Trump, but they did not anticipate what Donald Trump was willing to do. He sort of one-upped them. What he did was unclassify the telephone conversation. Whenever the president is on the telephone, especially with leaders of foreign governments, there are a number of people on that telephone conversation. And yes, there are people transcribing what the president is saying, and you have a what they call a memorandum of conversation, and they had one. and the Democrats, namely Adam Schiff, who most people don't trust because he's a pathological liar, let me just say this, but he is heading the so-called, for now at least, the impeachment inquiry behind closed doors. A rather unfair impeachment inquiry because he is directing witnesses not to answer Republican questions. That's interesting because these witnesses are under subpoena by a judge to answer not Democrat questions, but any questions addressed to the people under subpoena, in this case by representatives, whether they represent the Democrat or Republican Party. So that's why I call it, and Republicans are calling it, very unfair, and it is unfair. The Republicans are not able to call witnesses that can refute the testimony of some of these people. A few of the people were on the telephone conversation, but we don't have to rely on their testimony. We have a copy online. You can look at it. I have a link to it, and you can actually listen to it, the relevant sections. And that's what I decided to play. I thought it'd be interesting. Now, this is a reading. They're reading off of this memorandum of conversations. Now, why am I playing it? This is the one thing that the Democrats don't want you to hear, but you need a little background. What has come out is that in the 2016 election, the Ukrainian government at that point in time was interfering in the 2016 election on the side of Hillary Clinton. And that is what Donald Trump wants investigated. And it's perfectly legal for him to demand it because we don't want any government, whether it's Russia or Ukraine, interfering in U.S. elections. So that's the key background you need to understand. And we have court records to demonstrate. There are two people that were found guilty of interfering with the U.S. elections, not in the United States. You haven't heard this, or I haven't heard this on any big lie media, your major television networks and news, but it was news in Ukraine. So it's not a question of speculation here. Is there are people that were in the government then that were trying to, in this case, damage Trump. Helping Hillary Clinton didn't do much good. What President Trump wants is the Ukrainian government to find out what happened in 2016. And that is what the current prosecutor, remember this is a totally new government, is going to be investigating. And that includes, just part of this, is Burisma, which is a gas company, the largest gas company in the Ukraine. And that's the company that Hunter Biden and a friend of his were each getting $83,000 and change every single month. And that is also the same company. Well, I need to back up. In 2014, President Obama gave Joe Biden the responsibility for Ukraine, and he made many trips over there. And the United States was going to provide over $1 billion, $1,000 million, to Ukraine to develop their natural gas, their oil situation, but primarily natural gas. And they also gave some other aid. It totaled $1.8 billion. Well, most of that disappeared. And you had a prosecutor that Biden wanted fired. Now, there's been the stories on this. Some say he's corrupt. Some say he wasn't. The issue was the prosecutor was in the process of investigating Burisma. And that's the company that Hunter Biden was getting, was on the board with a friend. Two of them were on the board of directors and for 5 years got a lot of money. But Joe Biden, in a presentation in front of the Council of Foreign Relations, it didn't cover this. This was only maybe a little over a minute. Joe Biden bragged about the fact that he got the prosecutor fired because he told him, you're not going to get any money. You're not going to get the loan guarantees unless you fire this individual. They didn't want the fact that the prosecutor in Ukraine had an investigation going on to Burisma. Now, the media in this country is saying, well, that was suspended. Well, they're not telling you the whole story. In other words, what Joe Biden was doing is accusing Donald Trump of doing what he did. The only reason Donald Trump wants the Ukraine to investigate this, it was the Democrats through the Ukrainians that were interfering in the 2016 election. He doesn't want it to happen again. And as chief law enforcement officer of the United States, yes, he delegates it to the Attorney General. That's perfectly legal. There was no quid pro quo. He wanted to get to the bottom, and because he doesn't want a repeat of what happened in 2016. So without further ado, I want you to listen to this reading. I know most people are not going to read the transcript. Since this is radio, though, there's a reading of this conversation, and it's between Donald Trump and the president of the Ukraine, Zelensky. The
Democratic-controlled House has called for a formal impeachment inquiry against President Donald Trump. The inquiry comes on the heels of a whistleblower complaint about a phone call exchange between Trump and Ukrainian President Volodymyr Zelensky. In response, on September 25th, the White House released a memo it says summarizes the phone call in question. Following is a reading of that memo.
Congratulations on a great victory. We all watched from the United States, and you did a terrific job. Came from behind, somebody who wasn't given much of a chance, and you ended up winning easily. It's a fantastic achievement. Congratulations.
You're absolutely right, Mr. President. We did win big, and we worked hard for this. We worked a lot, but I would like to confess to you that I had an opportunity to learn from you. We used quite a few of your skills and knowledge, and were able to use it as an example for our elections. And yes, it is true that these were unique elections. We were in a unique situation that we were able to achieve a unique success. I'm able to tell you the following. The first time you called me to congratulate me when I won my presidential election, and the second time you're now calling me when my party won the parliamentary election. I think I should run more often so you can call me more often, and we can talk over the phone more often.
That's a very good idea. I think your country is very happy about that.
Well, yes, to tell you the truth, we are trying to work hard because we wanted to drain the swamp here in our country. We brought in many new people, not the old politicians, not the typical politicians, because we want to have a new format and a new type of government. You are a great teacher for us, and in that.
Well, it's very nice of you to say that. I will say that we do a lot for Ukraine. We spend a lot of effort and a lot of time, much more than the European countries are doing, and they should be helping you more than they are. Germany does almost nothing for you. All they do is talk, and I think it's something that you should really ask them about. When I was speaking with Angela Merkel, she talks about Ukraine, but doesn't do anything. A lot of the European countries are the same way. So I think it's something you want to look at. But the United States has been very, very good to Ukraine. I wouldn't say that it's reciprocal, necessarily, because things are happening that are not good, but the United States has been very, very good to Ukraine.
Yes, you're absolutely right. Not only 100%, but actually 1,000%. And I can tell you the following. I did talk to Angela Merkel, and I did meet with her. I also met and talked with Macron, and I told them that they are not doing quite as much as they need to be doing on the issues with the sanctions. They're not enforcing the sanctions. They're not working as much as they should work for Ukraine. It turns out that even though logically the European Union should be our biggest partner, but technically the United States is a much bigger partner than the European Union. And I'm very grateful to you for that because the United States is doing quite a lot for Ukraine. Much more than the European Union, especially when we're talking about sanctions against the Russian Federation. I would also like to thank you for your great support in the area of defense. We're ready to continue to cooperate for the next steps. Specifically, we're almost ready to buy more javelins from the United States for defense purposes.
I would like you to do us a favor, though, because our country has been through a lot, and Ukraine knows a lot about it. I would like you to find out what happened with this whole situation with Ukraine. They say CrowdStrike. I guess you have one of your wealthy people. The server, they say, Ukraine has it. There are a lot of things that went on, the whole situation. I think you're surrounding yourself with some of the same people. I would like to have the Attorney General call you or your people, and I would like you to get to the bottom of it. As you saw yesterday, that whole nonsense ended with a very poor performance by a man named Robert Mueller, an incompetent performance. But they say a lot of it started with Ukraine. Whatever you can do, it's very important that you do it if that's possible.
Yes, it is very important for me and everything that you just mentioned earlier. For me as a president, it is very important, and we're open for any future cooperation. We're ready to open a new page on cooperation in relations between the United States and Ukraine. For that purpose, I just recalled our ambassador from the United States, and he will be replaced by a very competent and very experienced ambassador who will work hard on making sure that our two nations are getting closer. I would also like and hope to see him having your trust and your confidence and have personal relations with you so we can cooperate even more so. I will personally tell you that one of my assistants spoke with Mr. Giuliani just recently, and we're hoping very much that Mr. Giuliani will be able to travel to Ukraine, and we will meet once he comes to Ukraine. I just wanted to assure you once again that you have nobody but friends around us. I'll make sure that I surround myself with the best and most experienced people. I also wanted to tell you that we are friends. We are great friends, and you, Mr. President, have friends in our country, so we can continue our strategic partnership. I also plan to surround myself with great people, and in addition to that investigation, I guarantee as the President of Ukraine that all the investigations will be done openly and candidly. That I can assure you.
Good, because I heard you had a prosecutor who was very good, and he was shut down, and that's really unfair. A lot of people are talking about that, the way they shut your very good prosecutor down, and you had some very bad people involved. Mr. Giuliani is a highly respected man. He was the mayor of New York City. Great mayor, and I would like him to call you. I will ask him to call you along with the Attorney General. Rudy very much knows what's happening, and he is a very capable guy. If you could speak to him, that would be great. The former ambassador from the United States, the woman, was bad news, and the people she was dealing with in the Ukraine were bad news. So I just want to let you know that. The other thing, there's a lot of talk about Biden's son, that Biden stopped the prosecution, and a lot of people want to find out about that, so whatever you can do with the Attorney General would be great. Biden went around bragging that he stopped the prosecution, so if you can look into it, it sounds horrible to me.
I wanted to tell you about the prosecutor. First of all, I understand and I'm knowledgeable about the situation. Since we have won the absolute majority in our parliament, the next prosecutor general will be 100% my person, my candidate, who will be approved by the parliament and will start as a new prosecutor in September. He or she will look into the situation specifically to the company that you mentioned in this issue. The issue of the investigation of the case is actually the issue of making sure to restore the honesty. So we will take care of that and we will work on the investigation of the case. On top of that, I would kindly ask you if you have any additional information that you can provide to us. It would be very helpful for the investigation to make sure that we administer justice in our country. Regard to the ambassador to the United States from Ukraine. As far as I recall, her name was Ivanovich. It was great that you were the first one who told me that she was a bad ambassador, because I agree with you 100%. Her attitude towards me was far from the best, and she admired the previous president, and she was on his side. She would not accept me as a new president well enough.
Well, she's going to go through some things. I will have Mr. Giuliani give you a call, and I'm also going to have Attorney General Barr call. We will get to the bottom of it. I am sure you will figure it out. I heard the prosecutor was treated very badly, and he was a very fair prosecutor. So good luck with everything. Your economy is going to get better and better, I predict. You have a lot of assets. It's a great country. I have many Ukrainian friends. They're incredible people.
I would like to tell you that I also have quite a few Ukrainian friends that live in the United States. Actually, last time I traveled to the United States, I stayed in New York near Central Park, and I stayed at the Trump Tower. I'll talk to them, and I hope to see them again in the future. I also wanted to thank you for your invitation to visit the United States, specifically Washington, D.C. On the other hand, I also want to assure you that we will be very serious about the case and will work on the investigation. As to the economy, there's much potential for our two countries, and one of the issues that is very important for Ukraine is energy independence. I believe we can be very successful in cooperating on energy independence with the United States. We're already working on cooperation. We're buying American oil, but I'm very hopeful for a future meeting. We'll have more time and more opportunities to discuss these opportunities and get to know each other better. I would like to thank you very much for your support.
Good. Well, thank you very much, and I appreciate that. I will tell Rudy and Attorney General Barr to call. Thank you. Whenever you would like to come to the White House, feel free to call. Give us a date, and we'll work it out. I look forward to seeing you.
Thank you very much. I'll be very happy to come and would be happy to meet with you personally and get to know you better. I'm looking forward to our meeting, and I would also like to invite you to visit Ukraine and come to the city of Kyiv, which is a beautiful city. We have a beautiful country which would welcome you. On the other hand, I believe that on September 1st, we'll be in Poland, and we can meet in Poland, hopefully. After that, it might be a very good idea for you to travel to Ukraine. We can either take my plane and go to Ukraine, or we can take your plane, which is probably much better than mine.
Okay, we can work that out. I look forward to seeing you in Washington, and maybe in Poland, because I think we are going to be there at the same time.
Thank you very much, Mr. President.
Congratulations on a fantastic job you've done. The whole world was watching. I'm not sure it was much of an upset, but congratulations.
Thank you, Mr. President. Bye-bye.
Now, I found very annoying that mute background music, but I have no control over it. I'm using someone else's reading of that. Was anything illegal discussed on that phone conversation? Absolutely not. Was there any so-called quid pro quo demanding that they do something? Not really. They want to get to the bottom of what happened in 2016 when several government officials colluded with DNC, Democratic National Committee, to smear. In this case, it was Paul Manafort. And they did that. In other words, there was collusion, a conspiracy between Democratic Party operatives and the Ukrainian government. And what happened is when Trump did an upset and won the election, the prosecutor was, by the way, fired. That Joe Biden got the prosecutor fired. He brags about it. That was the quid. You have to fire the prosecutor. And what was the quo? This is Joe Biden's was doing this. You get the money. You get the loan guarantees and the aid. In other words, what the Democratic Party is accusing Trump of, Joe Biden and the Democratic Party did in 2016. That's what's really going on here. You listen to this conversation. I wish without that music, it was really annoying to me, at least, and distracting. I don't know why they put it in. There was nothing that was not appropriate in that phone call. And that's what you would expect with the recently elected president of a much smaller country, the Ukraine. He was a reform candidate, if a better way to say that. The people were totally disgusted with the corruption in the government, not only when the Russians had influence, but in the subsequent administration, and they voted this guy in. And he's putting his people in, and guess what? He's going to investigate what was happening in the Ukraine. That gets the Democrats very, very nervous because it exposed what was really going on. It was the Ukrainians with the Democrats trying to influence the outcome of the 2016 election. Yet the Adam Schiff, he's a congressman for Burbank, with a reputation for being a liar, a pathological liar. He was the one that several weeks ago did a parody. Now, he didn't call it a parody. He read, as the television cameras were on him, a parody of this. Now, he didn't say it was a parody, and he totally misrepresented the call. In other words, he was lying. And only when he was caught out did he say, oh, no, I was a parody. That's his way of saying, I was just kidding. You don't kid on something like this. And they keep going on and on calling witnesses when you don't need witnesses. You have a record. Now, what they're saying is some parts of the phone call were left out. Well, the people that were listening say that's not the case. It's not the case. You have partisans in the White House, one in particular, the so-called whistleblower. And technically, I don't think he's a whistleblower. He was a leaker, leaking early stories to the press. That's why they don't want to release his name. Well, his name is out there. What the Democratic Party is trying to do is cover up not only this scandal, but the bigger conspiracy between the Clinton, Hillary Clinton, Barack Obama, the DNC, the Democratic National Committee, were involved in a conspiracy to spy, surveil Donald Trump and the people in the Republican campaign for president in 2016. They came up with nothing. But in the process of doing it, they broke many laws. You're not supposed to use the people, the assets, the capability of, in this case, the American intelligence community against your political opponent in a presidential race. And that's exactly what the Democrats were doing. And starting probably either the end of the month or starting in December through next year, more and more of this is coming out. And what the Democrats are trying to do is confuse people by saying that Donald Trump committed a crime when he obviously did not. Now, Joe Biden is still in the race, and he's lying about what happened here. He says Trump is involved in a cover-up. No, he's not. Trump is acting like a responsible president. In this case, he wants to get to the bottom of what truly happened in 2016 when the Ukrainian government intervened in the 2016 election. in favor of who? Hillary Clinton, by smearing Trump. He doesn't want to happen again. Now, one final note. We learned today that Beto, or whatever, Robert Francis O'Rourke is dropping out. He was a crisis and fearmonger. He was going nowhere, but he was one of the radical extremist Democrat socialists. He will not be missed by the American people. As far as I'm concerned, good riddance. He went nowhere. This person has a very high opinion of himself, but his message was not resonating with the American people. So goodbye, good luck. Why don't you try to get a job in the private sector, sir? He will not be missed. With that, thank you very much for listening. And now, America the Beautiful.
The presenter of the Pronk Pop Show. Views expressed on this show are my own, unless otherwise stated, and do not reflect the opinion of KDUX Web Radio, Richland College, or the Dallas County Community College District. You are listening to KDUX Web Radio, broadcasting live from Richland College in Dallas, Texas, with a voice of Richland College. You are listening to the Pronk Pop Show, presented by Raymond Thomas Pronk, the People's Paladin Pronk, propagating faith, family, friends, freedom first. Broadcasted by Renaissance Radio, Radiating Reason, and KDUX Web Radio. Podcasted by PronkPops.wordpress.com and KDUX Web Radio.wordpress.com.